info booth, as usual, and then they will decide, depending on the number of people who want to attend, which room to give to you. I hope that's fine. Most probably it will be in the lecture room, just on the other side. Okay? Okay. So then, without further ado, once again, last year we had some slight problems.
You weren't supposed to mention that.
Sorry, I didn't. I wasn't supposed to. You should have seen it in my flat, on his laptop, hacking there all night, and I got to fix this, and next day, okay. It wasn't very good for the whole image of Ardour, so I hope you can recover this time. So,
well,
here is Mr. Paul Davis.
I suppose I have to thank Frank for allowing me the opportunity to redeem, not myself, but my software. Somebody called this a Paul Davis scenario, and I said, I don't like that. If you call it an Ardour scenario is fine. Okay. Let's see. So what is Ardour? It's been an enjoyable and fun way to spend the last 5 years coming up with something that certainly has existed before. There are plenty of commercial digital audio workstations, but there have been none for Linux, and there have been none that have been open source. Along the way, of course, writing a program that does what these kinds of software do is an incredibly frustrating process. You really have no idea when you begin writing software like this what it's actually supposed to do. After you've been writing it for a couple of years, you begin to have some idea of what it might do. And after you've been writing for 5 years, you realize the truth of the story that all good software takes 10 years. It's also been my pleasure to write this as a gift back to the same kind of economy that has given us the GNU project and Linux and all of the other amazing software that many people in this room are very familiar with. And also, despite all the frustrations, it has been a really satisfying puzzle. All right, so what is it really? It's a multi-channel, multi-track audio hard disk recorder and sequencer. How many people in the room have never seen Ardour, or even a screenshot? Okay, a couple of people. It has a flexible, powerful mix architecture that has received a lot of compliments, even from people who are familiar with hardware mixers and software mixers. It has a region-based non-linear editor. This is in marked contrast to audio editors, which are, on Linux at least, are mostly intended to edit individual sound files and do clever things to them. Ardour is primarily concerned, when it comes to editing, with editing chunks of meaningful sound. It could be, you know, an entire recording of something. It could be one bar of a piece of music. It has full MIDI control, in the sense that it can be completely controlled by MIDI. As most of you know, it is not a MIDI sequencer at this time. If you want to make comparisons to other software, then I appreciate it if you compare it to these four, rather than some other software. But Pro Tools, Nuendo, and so on are the kind of software that it's intended to compete with. Facts and figures. It's taken 5 years to write so far. The back end is about 20,000 lines of C++. That's actual expressions, not just lines in the files. The front end is about twice that size, possibly larger depending on how you measure it. It's been written primarily by me, who's worked on it full-time for that period. There have been two major part-time people who've helped with it. I'll mention names at the end. And at this point, we have another five or six people who make significant contributions to it on an ongoing basis or from time to time. It's a massively multi-threaded program. It's been rapidly prototyped, which is to say that rather than sit down and try to write a design document 5 years ago, we've focused on trying to explore the whole set of possible functionality that a program like this should have, go ahead and prototype something that works kind of okay, and then try to refine that. I don't believe it would be possible to write this program any other way, by the way, and none of the commercial tools were written by having a pre-existing design. They've all evolved over many years. And it's, you know, model view controller programming, all the rest of that fancy stuff that we're all supposed to be doing now. Since the last conference, in which Ardour demonstrated its amazing robustness and stability over and over again, a number of things have happened. One of them was crash recovery. I didn't actually do that right after the conference last year, but it might have been a good idea. We'll have a quick demonstration of that. Crossfades and fade handles, I'll demonstrate all of these in just a few minutes. Layering models, which we'll talk about. We now have a much improved model for how to slave order to other systems. That is to have order follow the position of, for instance, a video playback engine, some other hard disk recording system, and so forth. We also have the ability to export table of contents and queue files for CD burning. ARDA doesn't include CD burning facilities within itself, primarily because there are some very good tools available on Linux to do this, and the various front ends that let you do that have much better control and much better interfaces than ARDA probably will for a long time. However, we do let you export these files that allow you to write CDs in any way that you wish to. And again, to reinforce this point, one big difference compared to the proprietary operating systems is that these tools are all free. When I tell you that you need to go and use, well, whatever you want, CD record plus a front end, I'm not telling you to go spend any money. If this is a Windows system and I told you that you should go and buy, you know, CD burner foo, that means that you need to go and spend more money. So, without further ado, I'm going to actually quit out of this, and we will pop up. So I'm going to create a new session. Do we have sizes correct? Yes, we do. Okay. And we'll just try. Oh, did that laser pointer show up in here? Okay. I'll use the mouse for now. We'll just try to give a brief tour of the user interface. It hasn't really changed very much at all since people would have seen it last year, but for those that have not seen it, let me just see if I can get the whole thing up on the screen up there. There are two primary windows in ARDA. There's the editor window, which is up here. Along the very top, up in this area, I can, of course, use Gromit in this area. Whoops. I can't use Gromit because I can't draw. Up on that top bar, where there are some two sets of green letters, we have the transport bar. This has lots of controls to decide whether or not ARDA is playing or rolling backwards and so on. If you want to, you can tear this transport bar off and it becomes a detachable window which you can move around and put it wherever you want. When you're done with it, you can pop it back into place and it goes where you want to. The same is true with these two other triangles here that you can pop off. Just to go along the transport bar, because I think this probably has changed since last year, the first two buttons on the left-hand side take you back to the beginning of a session, jump you to the end of a session. This thing here is a scrub wheel, which I'll demonstrate its purpose once we have a session really working. Loop transport, which means that we're just going to play a loop. The next button plays a range that is defined. This is the regular play button. We have a stop button, record enable. Two clocks at all times. They can be set. Each clock in order can be set to one of any number of different modes. There are four useful modes right now. This one's currently doing SMPTE. We can switch that to do minutes and seconds, or audio frames, or bars and beats. We're going to take this back to SMPTE. And the other clock is independent, so you can get two views on the time. And over here we have a whole set of individual buttons whose function I'm not going to explain right now because we don't have that much time. I will turn that one on though. On the next line down, the next set of widgets, or I'm going to call it underneath there, sort of where the mouse is right now, if people can see that, we have sort of various editing controls. There's a clock over on this left-hand side, which is the position of the current edit cursor, which we may get to see. The next clock, which none of you can read, is the zoom span editor, which tells you how much time is visible in the editor window right now. We have zoom focus, which I'll show you what that does once we get moving. Snap to, I'll show you what that does too, and so on and so forth, a bunch of other controls. This last set of six buttons over here are the mouse mode control buttons. Arda has less mouse modes than many digital audio workstations. These control what operations the mouse carries out. These are the buttons I was talking about right here. And that's partly because other digital audio workstations seem to have evolved over many years towards what they generally call a smart tool, where what the mouse does depends on where the mouse is. And in many cases, most users seem much happier with these smart tools that are context sensitive than having to keep switching modes from one state to another. So one of the first questions that many people have when they start using Arda is, well, I have all these sound files, how the hell do I, you know, get them in? And the first thing you have to realize about Arda, and this is a mistake that I've seen over and over again, is people don't realize you have to have a session loaded. When I actually started up this program, in fact, I'm not going to redo it. If we had started Arda without a session, there would be a big message in the middle of the screen here saying, please create a new session. Somehow people seem to manage to not read that message and proceed to try to do all kinds of things that don't work, even though the message is sitting there telling them what to do. I'm not sure how we can work around that, but in Arda, unlike some other programs, you cannot do anything really unless you have a session loaded. And the main reason for that is that when you're dealing with audio files, you are talking about a significant consumption of disk space. And we have no idea where you want those disk files to be stored. If you fire up Emacs or any word processor, the word processor can hold everything you do in memory until you say save. And when you say save, it says where do you want to save it to, and you put it on disk. We can't do that here. So we require that you load a session and you tell Arda where that session will be stored before you can do anything else. And that's a very important first step. But even so, we have a session here, and I've got a bunch of files which are somewhere. Hello, thank you. Nautilus, where are you? Okay, it doesn't pop to the top. Let's bring it up. Unfortunately, I have very little experience using file managers. There it is. No, that's that file. There we go, okay. So over here, I have a folder that happens to be full of a whole bunch of WAV files that I picked up from a rather bizarre online competition. I'm going to select all of them, and then somehow, if I can actually figure out how to do this with this weird screen, I am going to drag them all into order. Okay, so I can't see what I'm doing. Help me. All right, this area over on the right-hand side of the screen is called the region list, and it's a list of a whole bunch of little chunks of audio that you have available to work with in the while you're working. Some of them might be whole files, some of them might be small fragments of files, but they're all in there available to work with. So now we have a bunch of sound available to us, but we have nowhere to put them. We could, if we had wanted to, actually drag a file into the canvas like that, and it would automatically create, whoops. I was going to do this anyway at some point. Okay, so now we have a whole bunch of tracks created because I had them all selected instead of just one. And we have them one file per track. We could also have dragged them in from here and dropped them like that. If we solo this particular track, but that's not the sort of material that we're really, really interested in, because we really want this, or where is the one I'm looking for?
Has been implies failure. Not so.
Okay. So we have a whole bunch of things available. Unfortunately, having done this massive import has messed up my original plan. So I'm trying to think whether to delete all these tracks or actually just start again very quickly. I think I might just start again.
Try the undo.
Pun?
Try the undo.
The undo won't get rid of tracks. If I had just inserted regions, it would undo all of that. But if you add tracks, that's not an undoable operation. So maybe we'll just work with what I have here. Let's just get rid of everything here. I could actually use a rubber band drag on this. I forgot. I could also use select all, delete. There we go. Okay, now we have a little bit too many tracks, but that's fine. So we have some regions over here, and ideal 1.7. Let me just scroll down a little bit. Let's blow this window up. Let's pop this into a track. Put it back to the beginning.
I want you to be you.
All right, but I don't really want the crescendo on the drums and the bass there, so I'll just trim it down. Whoops.
I want you to be you.
It's still actually slightly too long. Just change the zoom level a little bit.
I want you to be you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Bill. So we can bring regions into tracks, we can move them around, we can copy them by just, you know, dragging them around. Once we've done so, we can get rid of them as well. As I just showed you, we can trim the ends off of each end. There's also a clever little trick that you can do where you can actually move the contents of the audio regions inside of them. It's not often something that you need to do, but since Pro Tools does it, so do we. All right, let me go find another region down here. We'll just pop this in underneath here.
I want you to be...
Whoops, now we're soloed. Let's just get this track in. We don't need to be soloed.
I want you to be you.
Okay. Now, in order to do anything useful, I actually have no idea what the original BPM of this these samples were. Whoops, sorry. I'm just going to change the tempo map to 80 beats a minute. And up here, we can up the on this thing, we can set the snap to setting. Snap to controls almost every operation in Arda that lets you set the position or the length of something. And what will happen is almost everything you do will be quantized or snapped to some unit of time that you have defined. There's quite a lot available, as you saw from the list. We have the usual bars and beats that will follow the tempo map that you set up in the top area, which I didn't really talk about, but is there. You can snap to SMPTE frames, SMPTE seconds, all kinds of things. And for a lot of work, this sort of operation is really critical. So right now, we're going to set snap to beats. And when I trim this region, you should hopefully see that it's sort of jumping in between the lines. It won't go any further than that because that's the end of the file. I think I want it to be about that long. So
I want you to be you.
All right, now we need to do a little bit of that incredibly boring loop type stuff. So we'll just duplicate that region 6 times. We now have 6 pasted in. I talked about zoom focus. If we zoom in, the current setting is the playhead. So if I now change the zoom, it will attempt to keep the playhead in the center of the screen. who are zooming in further and further, zooming back, the other way, and the playhead stays in the center. Obviously, there are other settings, left, right, the playhead or the edit cursor. I'll leave it on the playhead for now. That which setting you want depends an awful lot on what you're doing. What was my next point going to be? Over in the region list, sometimes you're looking at this list. Oh, which one did I want? You can just click on them with the middle button.
What are you afraid of? Failure.
And listen to each one. Was it that one? Was it that one? No. Okay. Was it? No. Okay. All right. Let's get has-been 10 over here, and we'll put it on. Stick it in about there.
I want you to be you.
Let's move it back a little bit. You know, I really don't want it to fade in so fast, so I grab this little box that's up in the corner of the region, and I drag it over, and it gives me a fade-in handle. By default, I get a linear fade-in, but if I want to, I can go up and change the shape of it. Hopefully you can see that change to a curve. Let's go the other way and go to the fastest fade-in. We'll take it back to linear. And if we now just play this one a minute. Nice and slowly. So if we listen to the whoops.
I want you to be you.
So we can change the fade in so that things come and go reasonably. Let's put the trim back up to none.
I fell in love with you.
That's good, okay. And we'll trim this one back. This back up to beat.
I want you to be you. I fell in love with you. Well, maybe that could go, but everything else.
All right, so hopefully you're getting the idea that we can play around with things in all kinds of ways. Just to demonstrate another feature that was added recently, I'm just trying to think what we should grab here. We need a really nice short little segment. Let's go back to none. If we set the snap to setting to bars, and then we've selected this small region where the mouse is right here, and I press, hold on, I'm sorry. That's not working too well. Oh, I'm snapping on beat. Okay, I didn't realize I'm zoomed in at a different level. Just undo those, okay. Go back to beats. This is called brush mode. And it lets me just paste in a whole series of tracks. Thanks, Bill. Obviously, these are all independent, so you can go back. And we could copy these things, you know, arbitrarily in various ways. And so on. So there's lots of opportunities for, you know, chopping up things, moving them around, changing the fades and so on. One last feature I just want to show that I mentioned in the beginning that was added since last year are crossfades. This fade in that I've just shown you is something that applies just to that one region and controls what the gain is like as that comes in. If we go and grab some obnoxious.
You're talking to me.
Yeah, that'll do nicely. Bring this over here, and then maybe bring up this guy over here. Okay, now in this area where they're overlapping, something has to happen. There's a lot of things that could happen. We could just go from one region straight into the other one. And sometimes that's what you want. Sometimes you're gonna want them to fade into each other. Sometimes you're going to want to fade just at the point where they begin, and sometimes you're going to want them to fade in over the course of the whole overlap. An ARDA lets you do any of those. So if we click on the region where there's an overlap, the very top item shows a transition between two regions, has been 2 and melodic 14.1. At the moment, I have my options set such that crossfades by default are short crossfades, so we get a very short crossfade just at the beginning of the overlap so that you won't hear any kind of clicking or anything going on in that area. But I can convert it to a full overlap. I also had them set to be turned off by default in my configuration right now. If I unmute it, you can now see the crossfade. If we play this by itself,
what'd you say your name is?
It's not, I haven't picked the best material for the transition, I'm afraid, but you can hopefully hear
what'd you say your name is?
Fairly reasonably smooth transition. Sometimes that still isn't what you want, and you can then pop up this wonderful little crossfade fader, which you can then drag the points around. That you're editing the fade-in curve right now. There are presets that you can choose, you know, to do whatever you want. When you're done with that, you can go to the fade-out curve, set that however you like, just to demonstrate the marvelous potential of this wacky tool. If we now go back, you'll see the lines are there. Let's just zoom in on that so we can see it a little better. Oops, I can't see what I'm doing. Sorry, there we go. So there are the lines, and just so you all know what this sounds like, why don't we just play it?
Would you say your name is?
Jack.
Okay, so we have, let's go back a minute. We have working crossfades and so on and so forth, and you can do an awful lot with them. What time is it now? 25. I started at 5, I think. You can obviously change track heights, which I'm just showing here. I did show automation last year. I'll just give a brief summary of that here. If we go and click on this A button, which is for automation, as the pop-up says, we can come down and we can show a dedicated track. It has a ghost waveform in it. And if we put this track into write mode, let's bring the editor mixer up. Track, and now we play. Whoops, hold on. Let's go back to the beginning.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You calling me Aspen?
Okay. So now we'll put this into play mode. Come back to the beginning. If you watch the fader on the side,
talking to me? You talking to me? You calling me?
Go back to the fader on the side.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You calling me Aspen? Okay. What'd you say?
So you can automate gain and panning right now. We will, in the relatively near future, allow you to automate. So you can also automate plugin parameters as well. Any plugin parameter, including for that matter VST plugins, if you build it with VST support. You cannot automate send levels right now, which is unfortunate. We will be adding that at some point in the future. It's not very hard in the back end, it's just, it's hard. It's a little bit tricky in the GUI. That's automation data. Now I'm gonna jump out of this session into another one. Perhaps I won't. Maybe we'll just stay with this one. Let's go over to the other window now, which is not coming up for some strange reason. Is it down the bottom? Oh, there it is, okay. Okay, this is the mixer window, which offers you a different take on what you're working with. The editor window is giving you a time axis to manipulate regions and sound on. To let you control the values of various parameters through time. The mixer window is here to present you with sort of signal flow. Each strip can be imagined as having data being poured in at the top, It comes in through the input button, possibly goes through a polarity reversal, maybe gets soloed, maybe gets muted. These are automation buttons. There's a record enable button. It flows through this black area, which I'll show you what it's for in a second, goes through the gain fader and comes through the out of the output right at the bottom. And that's repeated for every strip. By default these days, all artist sessions are created with a master output bus, which is over here. This is not built into the program, unlike most other digital audio workstations. There's nothing special about the master bus. You don't have to send anything to it. You don't have to use it. You can even create a session without the master bus if you wanted to do that. But we've got that. Now, these little black boxes, the enigmatic sea of darkness that floats above the faders, is where we insert things that are called redirects. Now, why do we call them redirects? Well, I just described this idea of the signal flowing linearly through the strip. A redirect is anything that breaks that signal flow. It redirects the signal in some way. Now, the simplest type of redirect is a plugin, which is something we actually conceptually stick right in the black box. The signal goes into it, comes back out, and carries on flowing through the strip. We could also put in a redirect that we call a send, where the signal comes in and goes straight through, but it also goes somewhere else. We send it off to some other place. The sends are jack-aware, which means that the destination could be inside of Ardor, or it could be some other jack-aware application. It could be one of the outputs on your sound card. It could be Jack UDP, and you're sending it, you know, across the world to some other location. Who knows? And the last type of redirect is an insert, which is also jack-aware, and it creates two sets of ports, a set of output ports, a set of input ports. It delivers the signal flowing through the mixer to one set of ports. They go off out into the great unknown, and something comes back. Ardor doesn't care how you connect them up. You could have the outputs going to a hardware effects unit and have the returns coming from somewhere else. It doesn't care. So for those of you that haven't seen this kind of stuff before, we have a big list of plugins, courtesy of people like Steve Harris and Tom Zalagi and various other people, possibly hundreds of plugins all the way through here. We can stick in something. Actually, where is, before I do this, let me just go check. I can't remember where I put Bill's main vocal part. That's on, is that audio 4? Okay. The only problem with this plugin is it often tends to scream when you turn it on. Nope, not that time. Okay, solo this.
I want you to be you.
We pop them up, they have a little GUI, which is popped up down here, and we can control all of their parameters. You can stack them. For instance, we can put in a 10-band EQ immediately after it. Turn it on, pop up the GUI.
I want you to be you.
We can also drag them around to change the ordering. If we suddenly decide the order's wrong, we can turn them off individually and so on. So you can stick plugins. There's no limit on the number of plugins that you can insert in a track. There's no predefined number of slots for them. How many you can handle is just a function of what your computer can deal with. There are, as I mentioned earlier, two locations for redirects. One of them is above the fader. One of them is, let's just get this up. One of them is below it. This is a post-fader area, so the signal that goes into these plugins has already been through the fader. In a future version, we intend to add another area right after the panners. It turns out that there's quite a few situations right now where you'd really like to put plugins or inserts or sends right after the panners, not beforehand. But you can't do that right now. Lastly, but not leastly, let's just touch upon the panning session.
I want you to be you.
Let's turn off the EQ.
I want you to be you.
We have two panners here because this was a stereo input stream. I went through this last year and it's why it was crashing. It doesn't make it crash anymore. We have two input streams and two outputs. The number of panners that you get is a function of how many inputs there are. What the panner looks like is a function of how many outputs there are. If you add more outputs, like this, that's the pitch shifter going crazy. Sorry about that. I believe it will fix itself at some point. Let's go back to the beginning.
I want you to be you.
There we go. Reset it. We just added an output. Now we get a completely different type of panner down here that has two little dots for the left and the right signal and three little red dots for the speakers, which you can move around as well. Okay. Of course, Arda is not a program that likes to have arbitrary limits, so the number of outputs that you can have is up to you. The only problem at the moment is if you go above 5, I have no idea how you want your speakers arranged. So you have to sit and figure it out for yourself. If we remove them, you'll see that we eventually go back to the regular stereo panners. You can link the two of them so that now...
I want you to be you. I fell in...
Oh, they are linked. Okay, sorry. I'm going to link them so they're in... Let me unlink them a minute.
I want you to be you. You probably can't hear that, but we're crossing over the left and the right channels, and they're linked together, or you can make them so that they're both linked.
Oops, sorry. Unlink. We can now link them both together, moving in the same direction, and then they'll move in the same way. The time at 6:35. Okay. I mentioned that we've had a lot of improvements with MIDI, with slaving and so forth. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about MIDI control from faders and so on. If you have a MIDI fader box, such as the wonderful PV1600X, expensive but worth every penny or cent or whatever unit of currency you use in your country, you can simply go up to the mixer, control middle click on the fader, and it automatically binds to the fader. We can do that for all of them. Where's the one I was working on? Just put it on here. If we play back now.
I want you to be you. I fell in love. Full volume control.
Okay. We can do the same thing on the panners. If I middle click on that, I've got panning control. They're linked together so they move, but if I unlink them, we just move one of them. I can link the other one like that. And so now I've got independent MIDI panning control on this fader box. I also have my fader box preset so that I can actually, let's go back to the beginning of this thing, and where's the editor? Let's mute this track. I can hit play on... Oh, I didn't have it turned on, I'm sorry. I thought I had this activated. I do. All the testing in the world can't save you from certain things, can it? Let's see. weird. Two hours ago. Well, in theory, if this was working, I'd be able to hit the buttons on my fader box, and it would just simply be under the control of the fader box buttons. I thought I had that all hooked up. Well, you've seen the, I mean, this is definitely sending MIDI. I can see it on here, and you've seen the faders moving. Okay.
I want you.
So, let us, what time is it now? 38. That's sort of a quick tour of the functions in both of these windows. I mean, there's an awful lot more to this program than that. Just to give you a another quick view of Arda working hard at work on a large session. Unfortunately, many of you have heard this piece of music before, and I don't like it, but. So I already set up fader control on this, so. So here we go. This is 22 tracks. We're using about 7% of the CPU of in the DSP code. If you have a look at my system monitor up here, the total is about 11% for the whole program. This is about a 2.8 gigahertz Pentium 4. So, all right, enough. So, what the hell was that? Okay. Let me just go over and talk to Ron a minute. Okay, one of the things that we didn't really add to Arda this last year, but has the tools to do this have finally become more widely available, has been enabling the use of the internet with Arda. And I'm about to do a demonstration of how we do that. I just want to talk momentarily about, you know, what's going on in this. There is a very, it's a great little tool called ICES, which comes from Ziff, who produced the Ogg Vorbis codec, the Vorbis codec and the Ogg container format, that lets you connect it to Jack, take any output stream from Jack, and encode it as an Ogg Vorbis format and send it out to an Icecast server, which means anybody else can then listen to whatever you're sending. Now, what's important about this functionality is that it's adding an incredible tool to every single Jack client in one step. This is not Arda specific. Any Jack program can have its output streamed through this system. I just happen to be using Arda and XMMS to demonstrate this at work. What we're going to do right now is Ron Parker, who's one of the early and most patient beta testers of Arda, is in a recording studio in Minneapolis in the United States right now, and he is going to be streaming a live session right out of Arda, encoded as an Ogg Vorbis stream. It's not multi-track. Ron does not have the bandwidth to transmit a multi-track session, but we'll be listening to the master outputs of the session. I think he'll tell us what we're doing. And we're going to listen to that for a minute or so while he does some stuff on the other end, and we can listen to him working on it. And you can imagine this is very useful for studios, you know, like Ron's, that have issues with the declining use of recording studios. All of a sudden, people can come into the studio and you can tell them that they can listen to the mix from, you know, from wherever they are. After we've done that, we're going to use a piece of software that Tabin Rutkin wrote, where we're actually going to download a small fragment of the session that Ron is working on to this machine and demonstrate that we can open it in order here. We're only going to do a very small fragment. Ron only has a DSL linker home. I say only because it's what most of us have. But the DSL upload capacity means that it takes a long time to upload the whole session. And when I say a long time, like a whole weekend. However, the real idea that Tabin had behind Session Exchange was mostly as a tool a little bit like rsync, which is to allow you to do collaborative development. Wait a minute, I'm supposed to talk about this afterwards because I have to fill in some time. So I'll come back to that. So let me go over and see if Ron is already. I need to go up. I'm actually going to kill this version of XMMS because oops, I have the volume turned down. Hold on. Ah, Ron, wait. No, I don't. Okay. I'm not quite sure what the delay is between Ron. I believe it's on the order of probably 1 to 4 seconds of a delay. Oh, you know what? I can.
Okay, this is Ron Parker in Minneapolis, Minnesota at Mirror Image Studios. We're doing a live mix with Ardor. We're using Spiral Synth Modular. We've got two masher plugins running on the left and right channels of the overhead microphones on the drum kit. And so you'll hear that that synthesized audio feeding through there. We're going to use Icecast and the Oddcast jack module to do a stream off the stereo bus of our mixing console. And when we conclude about a 1 minute mix, we're
Ron may be messing with it himself. That's possible. Oh, that's interesting. That would suggest there's a lot of lag. Oh, all right. I think he's... Cutting in some of the channels and cutting them out, so you can just hear bits of the mix. I'm actually just going to go back and bring up the.
Let me fast forward up to a spot. Hopefully, you guys are hearing some of this.
One more slide. Where are we? Okay. So just to demonstrate what was actually happening there a little more clearly, we had actually. You know what I want to? All of you, you can't stare at this because I want to type stuff in. I'll come back to this in a moment. I want to start up something that will take a little while to run. So. Now, there are problems with the name of Tabin's program, of course. Session exchange was the concept, and unfortunately, there's only really one sensible way to contract that, which leads to all kinds of amusing jokes about, you know, sex. We can have all kinds of stuff about bouncing and jacks and whatever, but hopefully we're not going to make any of those because we're all mature adults. And what I'm going to do is, right, I'm going to start sex here. See, you're all smirking already. Come on. Keep it together. Okay. Sex is a little application. I'm going to run through this right from the beginning as if this was the first time I'd ever run it. Little Python script. I just typed in my name as a collaborator. And as I said, while we're running this, I'll explain a little bit more about what this is actually for. Sorry. Just a minute. I think it's one of the things about sex is that Tabin's adopted an approach of sort of security by obscurity. Unless you know the name of the person you wish to collaborate with and the name of the session, it won't do anything. So you can't go randomly fishing at various places to actually find out what's there. You actually have to get the names right to start with. It's debatable for lots of reasons whether that is the best approach, but it does, you know, it works quite well for the time being. Come on, Ron. There we go, okay. LAC is called X. Okay, so if I click on this and I go up and add a collaborator, 9134.141.17. Yes, I remember these things. And then I type studio of Scott of the session. Oh, damn, okay. Thank you. It was Skull. Thor played that?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry. Utter incompetence here. LAC. Third time's a charm, right? That one. God damn it. This normally works much faster than that. Let's see. Tell you what I'm going to do. This is still a fairly prototyped application right now, and just put it where it was going to be. LAC. There we go. So there's a snapshot, and if I now click on Fetch Snapshot, it's going to start fetching it. And meanwhile, it comes over in the same format, in the native file format that Arda uses, so they're 32-bit float files. And we'll return there in just a moment. Okay. So while that's running, I'll ramble on for it. It's going to take a few minutes to come down. What was happening in the demo is we had the Mirror Image Studios in Minneapolis. Jack was running Otter. We had the master routes feeding into Jack, which then fed the ICES client, which then feeds an ICE-CAS server that's running, actually an OddCAS server that was running on his machine, that then feeds the stuff to the internet. That then comes into my machine via XMMS, which is using the XMMS Jack output plugin, which feeds Jack. And the way we listened to it, it was connected directly to my audio interface. If I had more time and things had not gone a little weird, I was going to demonstrate the signal going into Otter. But any of you who've used Jack will, I'm sure, appreciate that you could have just connected the signal from XMMS straight into Otter to be able to listen to it. To go back to sex for a moment, Isn't it great to be able to say that at an audio conference? Thanks, Taban. It was primarily envisioned as a collaboration tool. If you were working on a session with somebody else, you would do this initial sort of massive download of whatever they had, possibly not even via the internet. You might start off with a transfer on a DVD or something. When you run it, it is more like a tool like rsync, in the sense it will incrementally update whatever you have in your session directory based on what the other person has. And it does it using snapshots, which are a feature that Arda has, where you can save the state of a session at a particular time. So rather than downloading an entire session, what you're actually downloading is a particular snapshot, which lets you have finer control over what you're collaborating on. You know, you may have your version, and you save that as a snapshot, and then you save a different snapshot, and you collaborate on that version. Several people have used it so far to exchange stuff. I don't know of any actual real artistic work that has come out of it. The program is still something of a prototype. It's written in Python. It's actually not very long. Most of the hard work is done by the Twisted library, which is a fairly nice framework for Python programs to use the internet. And I think it you know, as Taban works on it and polishes it up, it may become a nice tool. The big addition to it, which he's planning to do soon, is to add FLAC format, which will compress all the files by about 50%, which will enable you to transfer things a little bit more efficiently. Unfortunately, for those of us who are stuck on DSL lines rather than having access to, you know, T1s or T3s through various institutions that we're associated with, moving high-quality audio around via the net is still rather problematic. But hopefully, as the bandwidth expands, we'll get better. Okay, so it's done. And if I now fire up Arda on... Now, none of you will have to believe me, but this is a session that we just downloaded from Minneapolis. It wasn't on the machine before. We just downloaded this 10-second clip to make it fast enough. If we'd have been prepared to wait for several hours, then we could have brought in, you know, a much more significant chunk of audio. I don't know why there's no peaks visible for this. That's an interesting error I'll have to check into. But so... that was a demonstration. Oh, that's the reason why there's no peak files. Great. Okay. Let's get rid of that. We don't need to see that. Back to the slideshow. Okay. So, the status of Arda right now, 0.99 is scheduled to be released tomorrow. I think. I'm not sure. There are going to be no further functional code changes between that and 1.0. It will be frozen so that the translators can catch up. We have about 7 translations right now, and those guys have had a really hard time over the last year keeping up with things because the text messages keep changing on a daily basis. I hope that the 1.0 RC1 file will come out about 10 days later. When that does come out, we will immediately fork an entirely new code tree, which it will be the basis for the port to GTK2. Is the program free of bugs right now? Not really. But is it useful? Can you do a lot of stuff with it? Is it powerful? I think it really is. People who've been using it for quite some time have been very impressed at the stability it's gained over the last 6 months. The functionality has not actually changed an awful lot over the last year, even though there is, you know, hundreds of things that have been fixed and improved. Most of the work we have left to do before 1.0 right now is stuff to do with themes, with installation, uninstallation, translation, packaging, and so on. As to what's going to happen immediately once we start the port to GTK2, The main reason we're doing that port is because GTK2, well, first of all, GTK1, which is the toolkit that we use to draw the graphical user interface right now, is really rather out of date. It has no support anymore. There's lots of things about it that really are not that great and we've had to deal with in nasty ways. And most of them are all fixed in GTK2. It also looks a lot nicer, primarily because it has support for anti-alias text, which will immediately add a certain kind of gloss to how things look. There are some very useful widgets that were not in GTK1 that we could really use in very nice ways. And the canvas widget, which is what is used to draw all of the track displays with waveforms and so on, we will be moving back to using the, sort of a mainstream version of that widget, which will help us to catch up with various improvements that have been done to it. Once that port is complete, we will release 2.0. The idea is that 2.0 will differ from 1.0 only in the fact that it uses GTK2. There'll be no functional changes between 1.0 and 2.0 at all, even if we have found bugs in the meantime. And we'll then start work on adding MIDI recording and playback, which I think recording and playback will actually be very easy. The editing part, as Werner and various other people know, is significantly more complicated, but we hope to take strong benefit of the we hope to make strong use of the benefits of the GPL here. Come on, that took you a moment. There will also be work going on GUI reorganization and improving the workflow. One of the things that the commercial tools like Art that do the same kind of job as Arter have really benefited from their sort of long history and use in studios is a very great optimization of the workflow. You know, operations that are done very repetitively are very, very quick to do. You don't move the mouse from one corner of the screen to the other corner. And we have some things that are actually, you know, very good in Arter right now already. In some cases, I think better than the commercial tools. But there's lots of areas where we don't get that highly optimized workflow right now. This is a screenshot. It's not a screenshot. It's a mock-up that was done of what the post 2.0, not the 2.0, but the version after 2.0 comes out might look like. You'll notice that the colors are totally different than the one I just demonstrated. That's not really the most important part. There's anti-alias text. We consolidated all of the lists over on one side so you don't have to move the mouse from left to right all the time. This is all made up of stock GTK icons, which we're unlikely to use, but the person that drew this just wanted to gather together some ideas. And it gives you an idea of, you know, some of the ways that the program might evolve. It wouldn't be complete without some thank yous. Jesse Chappell and Tabin Rutkin have been working on Arter for several years now and have made an amazing contribution to the program throughout that time in many different ways. Recently, Gerard van Dongen, Satan Pusavalainen, I think I'm pronouncing that right, and Nick Mainsbridge have sort of jumped on, in some cases, you know, contributing really substantial work. In many cases, work that I either could not or just did not want to do. Ron Parker, Doug McLean, Jeff Beasley, and Mark Necht have been very involved beta testers, regardless of their level of expertise with Linux or with programming. They've sort of sat in there testing stuff out and reporting back to me on what doesn't work. Everybody on the Arter channel, at Freenode. I spend way too much of my time there, but it's been a great place to hang out. And in the background, all the people on LAD. And that's the end of the record. I'm almost on time, so.
Sir Paul.
That's not necessary. All you have to say is, I noticed he didn't crash.
I was about to say, consider thy honor restored. I think this was quite an impressive demonstration. We have a few more minutes for questions from audience, both inside this crowded room and also outside. Give me your hands. Ha, they are overwhelmed again.
I'm Tapio Lappalainen from Finland. I would like to ask about the editing feature. When I would like to move one region, let's say 50 milliseconds to the right, how easily is it done?
Really relatively easily. If you believe that you can do it visually, then you can do it that way, but I'm assuming you want to do it exactly 50 milliseconds,
yes,
right? There is a, let me just pop this back up.
Because with the key commands, it is much faster.
With what?
For example, with key commands or some button to press, not with the mouse.
Right. I don't think we have a binding. I'll tell you what, the name of the operation in Arda for doing that is nudging. And there is a clock over here where you can simply set the time to whatever time you want. If you set it into minutes and seconds, you can just go in and put 0. What do you want? Is that right? Something like that. And then if you select the region and nudge it, it'll just move. Now I think there is I believe that it's possible to bind the key to that command. I don't think we have a default binding right now, but you could have something bound to it and it would nudge. If you select multiple regions, they'll all move.
Okay.
You can also do that if you pop up the context menu for a track there's a nudge section which will allow you to nudge an entire track forward as well.
If the editing window is open, can you use also the nudge thing and like listen the first version and then click move the 50 milliseconds and listen right away if it's better or worse?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can do it. You can move it while you're playing it.
Great.
You're not hearing what you wanted to hear, but I mean, you can do it anytime you want.
That's great, because I think Pro Tools doesn't have this feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yes!
Strike one! If they'd have just given me the source code, none of this would have been necessary.
Hello, Josh Green from the US, and I had one question. I noticed when you were doing the mixers, you couldn't see the level when you had them all the way down, so I was wondering, is that a feature where you can see the level? You wouldn't know where the audio would be.
Sure, let me just demonstrate that a minute. If I can just, Ron's not streaming to us anymore. Disconnect XMMS from ALSA, and I will bring it in on, maybe on this guy. Okay, so if you click on this button down here, it changes the meter point. There's 3 meter points, input, pre and post. If you go to input, regardless of the fader level, you will see what the input levels are. If you set it to pre, you'll also see what the input levels are, but the condition is slightly, it's probably not worth me explaining the difference, and if it's on post, then you'll see them. Right, we're not recording right now. If I go into record enable mode, we're not playing back right now, so you won't hear them in post mode.
Is there any way to conveniently do that for all the channels across?
Sure. If you do, there's a general convention here, which is if you do control click on a button, everything in the mixer group will be edited. If you do control shift on the button, then it'll change all of them. I don't know if you can see them changing, but they're all changing when I click on them. And you can put things in groups, so you can have all the drums grouped, and then do control click, and they'll all change.
All right, cool.
So,
oops. Okay, more questions. Yep.
Albert Graf, Germany. Controller input, are incremental controllers, MIDI controllers supported right now?
I'm trying to think what they would do.
Well, let's say 65 or something means plus one and 63 minus one. So.